of Paul and his attitude and his emotions and things like that as we work through this book of 2 Corinthians. Anyone have any comments or anything along those lines? So since this was such a glorious gospel, and since God had committed it to him in such a great trust, he was determined not to become discouraged. And so we have already talked about in previous lessons and previous books all throughout the last year or more, as Paul was going through all these things, the persecutions, the different trials that he was faced with. During all those things, even though there were a lot of times when he could become discouraged, it was his goal not to become discouraged. He would not be disheartened by persecution. He would not be dismayed by hardships. And Paul understood that there is no harvest for those who faint. There is no harvest for those who give up in the face of all these hardships. And so he was determined not to do so. Writing to the Galatians in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9, he says, "And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart." And so there's a real danger in disciples growing weary while doing good. Even today, there is a great danger that we can do the same thing. That we can begin to faint, we can begin to lose heart, because it's not always easy, is it? There are things in this life that come upon us. We may not have to deal with the persecutions that Paul had to deal with, but we've talked a good bit about health issues and just different things like that. The devil never makes it easy for a Christian to live a righteous life. And so Paul was determined not to grow weary while doing good. No matter what was thrown at him, he was determined not to faint, not to grow weary, not to become discouraged. And so, in an effort to do this, we need to be keeping our eyes on Christ and the ultimate goal. Our ultimate goal is heaven. And keeping our eyes on Christ and the ultimate goal, this is going to help us remain focused. It's going to help us remain motivated as we go through life, as we face these trials, as we encounter all of these hardships. We need to remain focused. We need to keep our eyes on Christ, keep our eyes on the goal. The Hebrew writer in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down on the right hand of the throne of God." And so here again, this passage reiterates, the thoughts that Paul has, and that is we must remain focused on the goal, remain focused on Christ, lay aside all of these other things. Let's not allow all of these worldly cares and things like that to ensnare us. Certainly we have to deal with those things. We have to make plans and we have to go through life, and it's not that we're not trying to live, it's just that we don't allow those things to ensnare us. Yes, Glenn.
And I know what you're saying when it's not easy. It's not easy when you try to go into the world and live in the world. Because in Matthew chapter 11, verse 30, this is the Lord saying, "My yoke is easy. And my burden is light." We've got the perfect word. Mm-hmm. There's no snares. It's easy. That aspect. And I try to teach that when it gets hard is when you try to live in this world. Yeah. Then it gets hard and difficult because you're not going against the world, you're going against the Word. That's what makes it difficult.
Yeah.
Because it scares some people. Think, I can't do it. It's easy.
Now we just have to remain focused.
With the world. Now, yeah. We need them.
Any other comments?
Oh, I did have one more.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to comment on again. And this would be a hard one. But there's a full lesson in verse 2, first or second Corinthians 4. In the middle part when it says, what not walking in craftiness, nor handling the word of God deceitfully. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lesson in just that one verse.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to speak a little bit about that here in just a few moments, but I'm not going to take up the whole lesson, but you could probably speak on three or four lessons just in that one phrase there. Any other comments? You know, all throughout history, God has often required or called upon his prophets to proclaim his words with courage. And I think it's no less true today that as Christians, as followers of Christ, we are called upon to proclaim his words with courage as well. But all throughout history, this has been a requirement. You look at Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 17. There he says, therefore, prepare yourself and arise and speak to them all that I command you. Do not be dismayed before their faces, lest I dismay you before them. And so there, God is requiring that the prophet go and face the people, not be dismayed, but proclaim his words with courage. Ezekiel chapter 2 and verse 6, it says, and you, son of man, do not be afraid of them, nor be afraid of their words through briars and thorns, though briars and thorns are with you, and you dwell among scorpions. Do not be afraid of their words or dismayed by their looks, though they are a rebellious house. And so here's just a couple of examples of how God requires his servants, his prophets, his followers to proclaim his words with courage. And so we need to follow in the footsteps of these men, of Paul and these other prophets who proclaimed his word boldly with courage. And there again, keeping our eyes on Christ and on the ultimate goal, we can do this and we cannot be discouraged in what we are trying to do. So anything else along those lines anybody would like to bring up? So as we continue on there, looking at those first two verses, as Glenn has already alluded to a little bit, Paul was determined that his conduct in his ministry was going to be upright and honest. This was a determination with him. He didn't want to use any craftiness. He didn't want to use any sort of deceit. It was an upright, it was an honest ministry. Let's look again there in verse 2. It says, but we have renounced the hidden things of shame, not walking in craftiness, nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. When we look at the methods of false teachers, those methods are such that they will bring shame. And we never want to bring shame on the gospel, but we see the methods of false teachers all throughout history, even false teachers today. And we see that those methods, the ultimate thing that happens there is they are bringing shame upon the gospel. And Paul renounced such things. In delivering the message of the gospel, the apostles and true gospel preachers do not use trickery. They do not use underhanded methods in order to preach the gospel. True gospel preachers are not out to take advantage of other people in any way, financially, emotionally, in any sort of way gospel preachers, true gospel preachers, are not out to take advantage of anyone in any way. True gospel preachers are not out to trick someone into obeying the gospel. And I think we even see people, and we have heard of people even today in the church that want to try to trick people into becoming Christians. You know, don't tell them who you are until you get them converted, sort of thing. And that's not the methods that a true gospel preacher would have. Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 through 5. It says, "For our exhortation did not come from error or uncleanness, nor was it in deceit. But as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, even so we speak, not as pleasing men, but as God who tests our heart. For neither at any time did we use flattering words, as you know, nor a cloak for covetousness. God is my witness." And so there was no tactic. There was no time that Paul or any of these other apostles were using deceit in order to teach people. They were always open. They were always willing to share and to be, you know, a totally open book to the people whom they were trying to teach. So we compare this sort of tactic, this sort of ministry, to, you know, what we have today in different aspects of our society when it comes to religion. You look at the modern day televangelists. You look at people like Joel Osteen and people like that in these mega churches that are using these methods that are underhanded, that are becoming millionaires off of their ministry, so to speak. You look at the faith healers. You look at the evangelists back in the 70s and 80s who were trying to con elderly people out of their life savings and things like that, getting them to send that in to them, and they were building huge mansions and having yachts and private jets and things like that. You compare what Paul was doing to some of these modern day televangelists. You compare what Paul was doing to these denominations, as we spoke about last week and maybe in a little bit the week before, who were trying to draw these crowds by entertainment, by a coffee bar as you come in, by sports complexes and things like that. They are using these methods to try to attract people. That's not what Paul was doing. And as we've already mention those who are actually in the church who may want to hide who we really are in an effort to convert somebody and then tell them, you know, what they're getting themselves into. That's not the methods that we use. No trickery, no underhandedness, no hiding things. As we go about speaking to people about the gospel, we need to be open. We need to be honest. We need to speak to them about what exactly they're getting themselves into when they become a follower of Christ. That's exactly what Christ would do. How did he respond? You know, birds have nests, foxes have holes, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. You know, this, if you're following me, this is what you're going to get into. But again, it's worth it. It's worth it on the other end. And we need to be open with that as well and make sure we try to get people to understand that the failure to do so is going to be a lot worse. As Glenn said, it's not complicated. It's not a complicated thing to do. Men make it complicated. When we start getting away and we start getting entangled in all these other things, but it's not complicated. And we can all do that, and we can be open, we can be honest, and we can be diligent in the way we go about doing that. He was not ashamed of the gospel, and therefore he didn't feel the need to hide the truth of the message or twist its meaning. You know, sometimes when we are ashamed of something, we try to hide it, don't we? We maybe try to twist the way people look at it. That way, in our minds, it lessens the shame of this thing. But if we're not ashamed of the gospel, then we're not going to try to hide it. We're not going to try to twist it. We're going to be open. We're going to be honest. And it's like, here it is. You know, if we're not ashamed of something, if we're proud of something, usually we're going around telling people about it, aren't we? You know, maybe it's our children. Maybe they were accepted into a great college or they got a good job or something like that. And so everybody we meet, we're telling them, you know, so-and-so, you know, my child is doing this. And we're very happy to share that with people. But maybe our child has done something that's shameful. Maybe they've committed a crime or they're in sin or something like that. No, usually we're not as quick to share that. But if we're not ashamed of the gospel, then there's going to be no need. There's going to be no feelings of shame in trying to show that and to prove that and to share that with others. You look at Romans chapter 1. In verse 16, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first, and also for the Greek. And so Paul was not ashamed of the gospel. And he was not ashamed because it was the power of salvation. The gospel was what was going to save men and is still saving men today. And so we too, like Paul, should not be ashamed. He wanted the manifestation of the truth. And you look at this definition of the word manifestation, Strong defines it as exhibition. And so we think about an exhibition. Maybe some of us have been to different exhibitions. And what is that? That you take what you have and you put it on display for others to see. And you stand there and you talk to them about it. You answer questions. You know, this is an exhibit. I'm going to allow you to learn about what I've got. And so this is the idea, this manifestation of truth. We're putting truth on exhibit, on display. We're showing others what truth really is. It's an honest and open declaration of truth. This manifestation of truth, this exhibit, this exhibition of truth. And so we as a church today, we need to be trying to put forth this exhibition of truth to the people around us. We need to exhibit truth. We need to show truth, talk about truth, not be ashamed of truth. Because truth is what is going to save others. And that's our mission as a congregation. So any other comments or anything that anybody would like to add to that point there? Yes, Bill.
I just like to add some verses to the craftiness, the deceitfulness.
Okay.
We find the verses that Philippians 1, starting verse 15. Some indeed preach Christ to you from envy and strife, and some also from goodwill. The former preach Christ from selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my chains, but the latter out of love, knowing that I am appointed for the defense of the gospel. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and in this I rejoice, yes, and will rejoice.
Yeah. We need to make sure our motives are correct. That we're not preaching from envy and strife. We're not preaching out of this need to be heard or need to show off. But we need to be preaching out of love. Any other comments?
Another way that ministers of the gospel can handle it in a crafty or deceitful way would be withhold the entire truth. Like, yeah. Paul said in Acts 20, verse 27, might be criticized, or you know, maybe something comes up and you know, oh, if I say something here, you know, such and such ain't gonna be mad at me. You know, and you withhold the truth because you're being influenced by other people. So to not declare the entire gospel, to not preach it in season and out of season, would be to handle it deceitfully.
Yeah.
I mean, you only preach it whenever it's beneficial for you, you know, for me, and when there's not going to be any kind of, you know, resistance to it. It's easy to say things that people want to hear.
Yeah.
But you know, most of the time, you got to preach what people don't want to hear. They won't like what you have to say.
Yeah. And while you were speaking, I was thinking about ways that we could withhold the truth, and one idea came to mind of, you know, today in our society, divorce is rampant, and it's kind of uncommon to approach people that may not be in their second or third marriages. And so as we begin to talk to people about that, you know, how are we going to deal with that? Are we going to withhold the fact that maybe they might be living in fornication until we get them converted? And then throw this on them, or do we need to be open and honest with, you know, this is the gospel. This is where you're at. This is what it's going to take for you to get right, and not try to withhold that information until we get them in the water, and then say, okay, you're dry now. You got to get out of this marriage. And I think we need to be careful with how we approach people like that, because that we're going to run into that a lot in our society, as far as marriages are concerned. Any other comments or anything anybody would like to say?
A penitent heart will see its way.
Yeah.
God gives you increase.
Rex.
The world thinks of us as a bunch of wackos. You see it where the news when they're reporting. You see somebody that's trying to live right. You know how they are, you know, just kind of winking and nod about it. And then us, on the other hand, we feel intimidated because of that. We should, but I think we do.
Yeah. Yeah, many times we do feel intimidated because a lot of the way the media portrays Christians, evangelicals, as they refer to us, is not in a good light. And many times they'll pick out maybe the worst among us to show. And so that kind of makes us ashamed, and we're afraid that we're going to look like those folks. And so we don't need to. We need to be bold and brave. I mean, the same sort of things were happening to Paul all those thousands of years ago. It wasn't on TV, but it was kind of the same thing there. And so we need to take our cue from Paul and be brave and open and honest. Any other comments? As we continue on in verse 3, Paul begins to look at why some are blinded to the gospel. You have some who are blinded and really can't perceive the gospel. And why is this the case? We look at verses 3 and 4. But even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. And so you have folks who the gospel is veiled, who the God of this age has blinded, and they will not see the light. And so this is a fact, and it's a fact even today. Even though the gospel is glorious, not all who hear it will listen. In fact, probably very few people who hear it are going to listen. They are going to be blinded to the gospel. The Jews were a perfect example of this. And Brother Bill sent me this passage this morning early while I was studying, looking over this, so I added it in. And it's in Acts chapter 28, verses 25 through 28. And here, Paul had made it to Rome, and he got there, and the Jews, he goes to the Jews, and he begins to tell them, you know, I'm Paul, You know, I've been persecuted by the Jews and other places, and you know, they put me in chains, and that's why I'm here. And the Jews there say, you know, we don't know anything about you. We've never heard anything of you. And so he begins to preach to them the gospel, and they begin to hear it. They begin to listen, but look at what happened beginning there in verse 25. It says, "So when they did not agree among themselves, they departed after Paul had said one word. The Holy Spirit spoke rightly through Isaiah the prophet to our fathers, saying, go to this people and saying, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and shall not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. Therefore, let it be known to you that the salvation of God has been sent to the Gentiles, and they will hear it." And so you have a perfect case in point with the Jews. The Jews had a lot more information about Christ than the Gentiles did, because all throughout the Old Covenant was pointing to Christ. It was preparing the way for Christ. And so the Jews should have been the first ones to be looking for Christ and accepting Christ when he had arrived. But yet they were the ones that were closing their eyes, closing their ears. They were ultimately the ones that killed Christ. Because seeing, they would not see. They would not understand. And they would not perceive. They would not hear. And so we have some like those even today. It becomes hidden to those whom the devil has blinded with the things of this world. You know, so many today, so many throughout history have allowed Satan to pull this veil over their face. You look at John chapter 12 and verse 40. He says, "He has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, lest they should see with their eyes, lest they should understand with their hearts, and turn, so that I should heal them." And so Satan is going to help deceive you. He's going to help you pull this veil over your face so that you do not perceive and understand the truth. He will keep you from understanding what is really important. He'll keep you focused on all of these other things. All of these other things that are out there, so that he can keep your mind off of what's really important. He will snatch the word from your heart if you allow him. Look at the parable of the sower. We'll read verse 19 of Matthew chapter 13. It says, "When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the wicked one comes and snatches away what is sown in his heart. Then he who has received the seed, then is he who received seed by the wayside." And so Satan's going to try to come, and he's going to try to snatch the truth out of your heart. Satan is going to make you feel good about focusing on things that really don't matter. You know, we all are commanded to work and to provide. And so Satan's going to use that to make us focus more on our job than we should. You know, you need to be doing this. You know, once you get this going, or once you do this, then you'll have an opportunity to serve God later. But the thing about it is it never really gets to that point, does it? And what Satan's going to do is keep you focused on your job, keep you focused on your business, so that you can't see the truth and understand the truth. He's going to use your business as a veil over you. He may be using your education the same way. He may be using any number of things to pull that veil over your face to keep you from seeing the truth. Maybe entertainment. Maybe your hobbies. As long as he can keep you focused on these other things, then he can pull that veil over your face, and then you won't be looking at the truth. He wants you to make anything a priority other than God. Even something that in and of itself is good, maybe something that in and of itself we are required to do, but yet we take it to the extent that it becomes a priority over God. You know, if he can keep us doing that, then he's got us where he wants us. If he can't keep us from coming and worshiping him without worrying about what we're doing out there, worrying about our businesses, worrying about what we're going to do after services today, where we're going to go play, where we're going to go eat, if he can hold all of that over us and pull that veil over us, even today, even right now while we're worshiping him, he's keeping us from seeing the truth. How many of us are looking at our phones trying to see what's going on out in the world even as we worship God? How many of us are pulling those phones out and looking? Satan is pulling the veil over your eyes today to keep you from seeing the truth. He's taking those cares of the world, bringing them in here to keep you from seeing the truth. And we allow it. And we think it's okay, I've got to take care of this. I've got to go do this. There's nothing wrong with me doing this after services or playing over here. But when we bring it in here, when it becomes our priority, Satan is pulling a veil over our eyes. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 9 through 12. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. For this reason, God will send them a strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all might be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. And so Satan is going to send you this delusion. This delusion, and so many people fall for it. We believe the lie. We believe this delusion that Satan has put in front of us. Why? Because we don't really love the truth. If we really love the truth properly, we would not allow him to put this delusion in front of us. We would not allow him to cause us to believe these things, the strong delusions. But yet, the vast majority of the people do exactly that. Why? Because they do not love the truth. They do not make the truth the priority. What delusions are we under this morning? Are we under delusions here, even today? Are we under the delusion that just because we showed up here this morning that we can go out and forget about God the rest of the week? I've done what I needed to do. I came to services. I sat through worship services. Now I can forget about him the rest of the week. That's a delusion that Satan has put upon so many people today. They think I can show up for worship and then forget about him. Satan is lying to you. He's lying to you. If you believe that, you do not love the truth, because the truth is much different. Do we think that we have plenty of time to make things right with God? If we do, Satan has put a delusion in front of you. We may have time, we may not. We may only have a few more minutes or hours or a couple of days. We don't know. How many people do we know whose life has ended prematurely? Do not allow Satan to delude you. Satan keeps us from seeing what's really important. Satan keeps us from seeing who he really is. He keeps us from seeing who Christ really is. And if he can keep us focused on all of these other things, he's got us exactly where he wants us. We must love the truth more than we love these other things. Don't allow him to pull the veil over your eyes. If you do, you will not see clearly. you will not see clearly. And he has you where he wants you. I appreciate everyone's attention and participation this morning. We'll pick up there. We have a few more things to say about verses 3 and 4. And Lord willing, next week we'll continue on with 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Thank you.